So sometimes the language we are using to speak about meditation is confusing. Same words are used with different meanings. And here I'm speaking English, which is not my mother tongue, which is not yours either, for most of you, so we understand still those words in a specific way, and there is also usage nowadays of certain word that seems to be precise, but sometimes they are even more confusing because we believe that we know exactly what they mean. When word is mindfulness, we think that when we say mindfulness, we are speaking about something very precisely, although we can use that in many different ways, and people using mindfulness have different things in mind. So when speaking about meditation, we use words believing that we all understand what we're speaking about, and there may be a lot of confusion. It seems that some patterns are developing that need constantly to be questioned. I remember one translator of Pali said, when you make 3 times the same mistake, it becomes a truth. So everybody translates the same way. You know? And there is a word like that, a very precise word, which is rupa in Sanskrit and in Pali. And people get used to translate that as form, and form is emptiness, emptiness is form. But if you check, it's not exactly what it means. And from the sutra itself and from other source of the meaning of the word, this translation does not work. But it has been going on for years, for maybe 1 century. So much so that I read a new translation and the translator excused himself. He said, but I'm not going to translate by form, although everybody is translating like that. And he started to use, a much more meaningful word. So I think it's important to question the way we speak about, to try to be clear and not to cling to some understanding that in a sense are sometimes misleading. Misleading in our practice is not so much about philosophy, although there is some aspect, but it's really about the practice. So I like to speak a little bit about a few aspects of the practice and also the word that we are using to try to see the meaning they can have and the different meaning they can have according to what we are practicing. So I think there is a distinction that needs to be made between what is called samatha and vipassana, or concentration, and what people may call mindfulness. And for some people it may mean that concentration mean that we are staying always with the same object, and mindfulness or vipassana means that we are changing of objects. So that's the difference between concentration and vipassana. But this is not the case. It is not a matter of changing of object or not. The distinction here to be made is with respect to the way one is relating to an experience, an object. The way one relates to an experience or to an object in concentration is not the same as the way we are relating to an object or an experience in vipassana. In concentration, we understand that in concentration it is about getting something stable as an object, and we tie the mind to it. So as the object is stable, the mind has no way but to become stable, because its object is stable. Something that is not changing constantly, or that some kind of repeating itself, so the mind, being tied to that, will necessarily quiet down. But if we see, even in my gesture, what it means that in concentration, we need to grasp at something. So by this grasping, we hold on to something that will help to bring peace to the mind. And that's proper. That's not a mistake of grasping to. What we can use in concentration, many experiences or objects. It can be like disc of colors, yellow or whatever. That can be sounds like budo, like they do in the Thai tradition. Can be some mind state, like in metta. Kindness can be also breathing. We know very much how breathing can be used for concentration. But when we speak about breathing, we understand that it can be being aware of a long breath, a short breath. Some people are counting, or being aware of in-breath or out-breath. But this is always a concept. It's not a mistake, but it is a concept. We are not breathing with numbers, you know. Numbers are something that is being added, first, second, third, and even in and out, the concept in and out, or long or short, are concept. And it's not a mistake. It's the way it works. It is why it is so helpful to concentrate or bring some calmness, because of the concept. Now, I have asked you the other day to make a movement with your hand from left to right. We have tried to do it in the past without success, to do it in the future without success, but we can say at least we can do it in the present. But even that can be questioned, because this movement, how much do I experience in one instant? I cannot experience the beginning and the middle at the same time, neither the middle and the end at the same time. So at one instant, there is only one position. So now I speak about a movement, it's correct, but the movement is a concept including so many experiences. And that's fine. But I cannot experience two instants at the same time, or two places at the same time. It's the same for breathing. Breathing, there's, if I have a concept when I'm breathing in, that there's a beginning and the end, so I'm keeping all that in mind, which is a concept. Breathing out, there's a beginning, middle and the end, so there's an anticipation of the end. So I see, there's a concept there, it's clear. So I'm not really in the experience. I am in a concept that is linked with the experience. Again, no problem, it's helped to develop concentration, but not wisdom. And there is no mistake in the Buddhist tradition. It is very clearly stated that concentration is not enough to develop wisdom. Concentration is enough to develop concentration, which is good enough, but then need to be joined, linked with vipassana, wisdom, in order to bring out the fruit of meditation. So in this context, the name mindfulness means to pay attention to something specific. Mindfulness there is to direct the attention to the breathing process, or to remember to repeat budo, 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 or to direct one's attention to the yellow disc, for example. So mindfulness here as an object of attention, it is turned towards something. And I think to be mindful in crossing the road, it's about the same. I have to be careful. I'm aware if the car is coming or something like that. Or to be mindful walking in the forest, maybe not to step on whatever. So mindfulness at this time, it's really being aware of the objects which are there. You know? So not to break something, for example. Or if we go in the kitchen, being mindful of something in order not to break cups or something like that. So there is, at this time, there is a clear orientation and interest in the content of the experience, in what is the object. So being mindful in many ways, even in daily life, can imply this way of observing what's happening constantly. I'm observing every instant. So I'm not distracted. I'm not cooking and thinking about my holidays. I'm cooking and being really aware, looking at what I'm doing, looking at the pot and looking at the rice or whatever. Being mindful there, not distracted. Yet this mindfulness has always an object of grasping, the rice, the pot, and so on. So that is the work of concentration, can useful, can be helpful in meditation to bring some stability of mind that then can be used in the other aspect, which is vipassana. So we saw in concentration the relationship is through a concept. We relate to the breathing through a concept. We relate to this yellow disc I was speaking about is usually with closed eyes through an image of that. Or we relate to Buddha, something that we repeat the concept. So it's not a direct connection. The connection as a mediation of a concept in concentration. Again, that's fine. But that does not lead to wisdom because the concept is bringing some confusion. So vipassana means to see clearly, to see through. And through what one needs to see? Through the concept. So in vipassana, there is no, we cannot stop at the concept. If we stop at the concept, then there is still some confusion that we need to see through. And the practice of vipassana, being aware of every experience, as we will describe, is for the sake of wisdom and freedom. Because what is conditioning us, what is limiting us, is not reality, is not life. It is our way to see life, our way to see reality, which is to see through concept. When we see life and reality through concept, then we are bound by this world of concept. Concept is stable and is also seems to be solid, and then we are suddenly trapped in that. But in what we are trapped is not reality, it's just imagination. So through our imagination, that doesn't mean it's completely uncommon, something that we share, but through our imagination, we are building our own jail. And then we are looking for exit. So in our imagination, we forget about imagining the exit, you know. We are only just imagining the world of concept. And if it is just another concept of exit, then we are just stuck the same way. So through the practice of vipassana and developing of wisdom, we'll clearly see and realize that this world that seems to condition us, to limit us, to make us suffer, we'll realize that has no other reality than the reality of the concept. And realize then we are not bound by anything. So in this sense, when the practice of vipassana, mindfulness that we use also, is has to be understood in another way or linked with another term that we could call alertness or wakefulness or something, then making it together. The Pali word is usually sampajanya. Okay, we don't want to go into Pali, but usually they are put together, mindful and alert, mindful and wakeful, in order to give the sense of a different way to relate to the experience. We saw in concentration, relate through concept. In vipassana, we relate to experience, to life, without the mediation of a concept, without stopping at the concept. And all our work in our meditation is not to stop at the concept. And usually we are fine with stopping at concept because that's what we need in daily life. As I mentioned the other day, we need to recognize something and that's fine, so we can use it. Because in daily life we are not dealing with trying to know reality. If I want to prepare a meal, my job is to prepare a meal, is not to know the reality of the pot or the rice, you know, because if it were this way, maybe we'll wait for the food, you know, till next day, because the cook is wondering about the reality of the rice and the pot. So luckily that's not what's happening there, because that's not what we want. But when in our meditation we really want to inquire about what is reality, then we are not just satisfied by recognizing the experience. It is pain, it is sadness, it is agitation, it is sleepiness. This is not enough. This is just stay at the concept. I know what it is. I recognize it, I can name it, but I don't know deeply what is the nature of this sleepiness, pain, or emotion. So we need in the practice of Vipassana to go deeper, to go through the concept. We saw in concentration that tranquility is developed because we take an object stable and we link the mind to it. So the mind has finally to be stable. But the tranquility which is developed in Vipassana, as we don't take an object and hold on to it so firmly, we may have a grounding experience, but it's not something we hold on to so strongly. It is not by choosing a stable object that the mind will be quiet. It is by working with the mind itself, that not feeding reaction against something or for something. As we don't feed on those reactions, finally the mind in itself start to settle and to be quiet, because we don't feed on reactivity. So it's different. We don't need to tie it to one experience. In my meditation, if I realize that I want something else, I see there's a desire for something else, then if I don't cling to that desire, I understand that, I see that clearly, I see this desire, and I understand that lead me to anticipate the future. I relax that, and I may see there's aversion for some experience now. I also don't feel this aversion, I'm just aware of the aversion, I don't bring energy into it, and slowly, as I'm not feeling aversion, desire, confusion telling a story about what's happening, so the mind naturally calms down. The mind is by nature, so to speak, calm, unless we stimulate it to go there or to avoid something. So the mind comes to a natural peace in Vipassana. And this quietness is called Kanika Samadhi, which means momentary concentration, because every instant the mind is stable. A mind which is not stable means a mind that cannot stay one instant is always dealing with something else and not in touch with something. Distraction is always when there's an experience, to try to get something else. But in this Kanika Samadhi, the mind is in contact with each experience. And as the experiences are changing, the mind is in contact with each experience as it's changing. And so there is also an element of concentration. Not that we cultivate distraction. There is a contact with the experience. So to see that in this sense, mindfulness here is different. It's not really relating to an experience through the concept, but relating to the experience directly without the mediation of a concept. It means more that it is a way of being rather than of knowing or looking for or observing. You notice with Patricia, we don't use observe, look, watch. This is a way to stay at a distance from the experience. And meditation is not to be at a distance from our life. Some people understand meditation as being at a distance. So I'm at a distance from my life, so I'm cool, you know. Not so much disturbed by all the life, you know. But that's fine. So where is our life, you know? So who is living my life? Nobody. So it's not about being at a distance. On the contrary, it's to find this way to be exactly, to be one's life, but without confusion. I can, through concept, I can hold on to my experience, my sadness, and there's confusion there. I'm not really deeply in touch with what's happening. And I think that's an important aspect. And in the practice, we feel that. When it's balanced, we feel I am really there in my life. Although there's not me and my life. There is life happening. And that is a very clear aspect of the experience. If I'm at a distance, therefore, it means I am still dealing with concept, you know, and bringing this concept in my mind of a meditator and an experience on which I'm meditating. So, in meditation, as long as we want to solve a problem, I want to solve this difficulty, bodily difficulty, psychological difficulty, as long as we have this attitude of solving difficulties, it means that we stay at a distance from the experience. Because when one is really mindful, one is really the experience, there is no wish to solve, there is no need to solve the experience, there is a balance in the experience, and the experience does not need to be solved. And I think that's a good sign. You can check, you know. I have some tension here, okay, I'm going to work on it, you know. We understand that it would be so nice, I work on some tension, and maybe I can even clear some tension. That's so nice, look at my arm before I could not move, and that's fine, but that is a limitation in the practice. That leads to a better movement of the arm, that does not lead to freedom, so one has to choose what one is meditating about. So confusion or delusion is to take the concept for reality. And of course we do that most of the time. It's like you go to a restaurant and you ask for the menu and you start to eat the menu, you know. Not very smart, you know. That the confusion. No wonder they have frustration. So that seems quite grotesque, you know, to eat the menu, I should say. I've never seen anybody doing that. But you see, in the way that we maybe try to be mindful in movement, in walking, it's quite possible so that we cling to an image of the body and trying to be really walking, yet we are clinging to the image of the body rather than experiencing walking. So at this time, we cling to the concept of body, believing that's a way to be present, but that's a way to be just on the side of what's happening. If I believe I need to observe my feet, from here I observe my feet walking, this is distant, there's a concept there. I cannot experience the contact of my feet on the floor from my head. And I'm not making the rules, you know. It's just the feet will feel, you know. So as long as there is this kind of distance, it means that we are cultivating a concept, working through a concept. And that's the way we start. Because otherwise we are going to try to be complicated. So I should not have concept, no image of my body. How do you do that? No image of the body. So now I build an image of no image. It's going to be difficult. So we understand there is an image, but we don't cling to that. That is helpful. We don't need to cling to it, and slowly that disappears, and we are really in touch with the experience. If we are not mistaken with respect to what we're exploring, so we don't cling to this image, and then there's just the experience of walking. There's also one concept that is very frequent, of course, is the concept of I. This seeing happening and I see, you know, hearing happening and I hear. But seeing sees and hearing hears. So the I is a way to bring something, a concept in the experience, and I think this building of the concept I in our experience is something that is essential in our bringing up. If we were not developing that in when we are very small, then I think it would be very difficult to have a stable consciousness. But still it's a concept. And in the meditation when there can be just seeing or hearing, see that the concept of I is a construct that does, that veil the experience, does not bring in the experience. So it's a concept. And as good as other concept, but not better. In one sutra, a few, but let's take one sutra where the Buddha speak about the attitude. So one monk is Malunkyaputta, one is old, he appeared in the earlier sutra, but when he's old, he went to the Buddha and said, "What, can you tell me what is the practice about? Now I'm old, I don't have much time, so please give me something simple." So we like that, you know, give me something simple. And the Buddha said, "Well, to a young monk, I will tell exactly the same. I will not make a distinction." And he asked him, he said, "Well, when in seeing, there's just seeing, in hearing, in tasting, and in thinking, just thinking, when you are neither here nor there, that is the end of suffering. It's nothing, there's nothing happening, there's seeing, there's hearing, there's tasting, and we could say also the emotion, there's feeling. You know. But when he said in seeing, there's just seeing, it means there is no distance with respect to the experience. There is really oneness in this experience, just seeing, just hearing, just tasting, and just thinking, or imagining, or whatever. In the simplicity of that, then there is no confusion, there is no elaboration. And at this time it is freedom. In just in this simplicity, that we don't need to bring something complex, but we know we will not start by that. If I hear the cars on the road, so first I hear the cars on the road, I understand that it's the way I need to function in many ways in daily life. But if I believe it is the only reality, then I am stuck with that. So I hear the noise of the car on the road there, then I get to, but what is it? What is my experience? And slowly, slowly, I come really just to hearing. It's just hearing. And I see at this time, I'm fully present. In hearing, I feel I am really, really in my life. And then there is no I at this time, there's just hearing. I don't need to bring that, to build that. And there is no bridge and car there in this experience, just the experience of hearing. Same with seeing. And I think you can explore a little bit seeing. Because I think that's one element that make a little bit walking difficult. The example of hearing is quite simple. I just stay within myself, so to speak, and just let this experience of hearing happen, and there's just this experience of a sound that is arising and disappearing. Just that. No construction. But in seeing, usually, especially when we walk, in a sense, I am stepping out of myself constantly. I'm walking here and there. I'm not really here. I can try bodily to be here, but my seeing project me always in front. Project me right there in the space. But seeing is happening not in front of me. Seeing is happening where I am. Seeing is happening here. It's quite strange. Your seeing is happening exactly where you are. But what you see, what you construct, that the noise of the car, what you construct is the horn. This, you place it in front of you. That is the meaning. But the expense of seeing is happening exactly where you are. If you put something in front of your eyes, you don't see anymore. So you don't need to go there and just put your hand there. So you see the seeing is really happening there. So try sometimes in the walking, while eating, to explore that just the seeing can be, if you move your head, seeing is happening here. The meaning I put in the meditation hall, that seems stable, but my experience of seeing there, every instant is different. So when one starts to be able to really not step out of oneself when seeing, just seeing, then it is very easy while walking in any movement to be fully present, not to pull oneself out of oneself in this expense of seeing. That's why when we walk, if it is stable, It's easier because, of course, if there is a lot of difficulties, one start to wonder, I should be careful here and there, and one start to need to deal with interpretation of what's happening. But if it is very simple, then this is a thing, can just happen wherever you are. Same while eating, I've mentioned the other day, how we don't know what to do with our eyes when eating. You know? Don't look at the person in front, we can't look on right, left, so we lose ourselves in our plate, you know. So, or we have some kind of blur, you look, you know, absent gaze. It's funny, we don't know what to do. And if we really were just in seeing, it's no problem. We'll be fully there. Just in seeing, even looking at our plate, we can, seeing our plate, we can be fully where we are. Not stepping out of ourselves in the seeing experience. Explore that in small movements. Can I really be there? So at this time, it will be, it's very, very rare that we see people really eating. Don't mean for you, I also mean for me. Well, there is somebody suddenly that is fully there eating. There's always some kind of difficulty. Oh, then I can always find some solution. I'm very precise in taking my fork and moving it and lifting it and tasting it. So that's okay. But in a sense, I start to observe what's happened or feel what's happening in my hand, but I am not fully there. So in seeing, just seeing, I think it's quite a beautiful exploration. And again, this seeing, when it just seeing, in seeing, just seeing, that means that we are one with the experience. We're not observing seeing. It's going to be very difficult if you start to observe seeing. We are this just seeing. We are seeing. Just that, in the simplicity. Masi Sayadaw in one of his teachings, and why do we meditate? In order not to grasp. We can find in many other traditions, the Tibetan tradition, in Zen tradition, they will all say the same. Why do we meditate? In order not to grasp. And all the setup and the silence and everything here is just in order to help us not to grasp. No, there is no other meaning. So what does it mean, grasping or not to grasp? As I mentioned, as we grasp at concepts and we mistake them for reality, then non-grasping, which come from the intimacy with the experience. In seeing, just seeing, there is no grasping possible. In hearing, just hearing, there is no grasping possible. In this unity of the experience, there is no splitting where one thing can grasp at the other. So in the unity of the experience, there is no grasping. At this time. And when there is no grasping, there is wisdom. There is a clear seeing. So how do we grasp usually, and what we experience in our meditation? Usually the manifestation of this grasping is through desire, aversion and confusion. In our practice, we see that as soon as there is a way that I don't want to experience what's happening, there is grasping. As soon as there is I would like another experience, I'm grasping at a concept, an image of something else, there is grasping. When I make comment about my experience, is good or bad or whatever, or it is because of this or because of that, there is grasping. So when there is no desire, aversion and confusion or delusion, when there are none, this is not present in our meditation, there is no grasping, and there is freedom. This is Nirodha. This is a cessation of the stream of grasping. And that can be experienced for us in any instant of our meditation. It's not that we need to build up a lot of things till finally after 34 years, then this is happening. It's just when the elements are balanced and if we understand the practice. Of course, if we want to solve problem constantly, then we will not have this attitude. But if we understand it is not about solving problem, but it is about being intimate with the experience, then at any time it is possible that we experience the cessation of greed, hatred, and delusion, and there's a sense of freedom. We really understand that freedom is possible. Doesn't mean it is a final cessation that would never arise anymore. But at least we trust, yeah, that's possible. That's possible for me, like for anybody else. Just because there's a balance in the mind, for whatever condition. So this wisdom is expressed sometimes in seeing the three characteristic, which is a bit strange way of expressing this wisdom. But not grasping means also there is no concept, no statement. To say it is this way or it is that way, this is grasping, this is a concept. To say it exists, to say it does not exist, this is concept, this is grasping. So when the world is experienced without grasping, there is no notion of it exists or it does not exist. So some people speak about emptiness, but it is another statement. If one believes then the world is empty, I am empty, it's just another way of grasping. So that any concept of being this or that does not apply. So you see, it's not a negation of the world. A negation will still be a statement. It does not exist. It is not this way. It is not that way. Although that statement, it's a way of experiencing the world, which is very different, which is not through a concept. Much more intimate. So to believe in the unreality of the world is also a way of grasping. And I think that's important because when one speaks about anatta or something like that, often people grasp at the other side. To say there is no self, so one grasps at there is this emptiness or this. It's not what it means. When there is no grasping, nothing can be stated or grasped as it exists or it does not exist. It is or it is not. So one aspect that is spoken about in meditation is about the absence of self. Say that we question the true reality of the self. But it doesn't mean that the self is the only thing that is being questioned. That the Buddha says a problem with the self, you know, you really don't like it, but all the rest is fine. It's not about that. It is just because it's so important in our life. But if we speak about anatta, or I and me, we could speak about the table, about those things do not exist more than the self or I. It doesn't mean that they do not exist. It means we cannot grasp them as existing. Just to exist, to not exist, it is just a world of concept. And it's not to be experienced this way. Anything. Not only the self, the table, the hall, everything. Not to believe that suddenly I just disappear, poor guy, I disappear, but everything stays, you know. So, well, that's too bad, you know. And that's misleading. It's just when there is no grasping, then no statement, it exists or it does not exist. You know? So we could speak about anatta, about the lake and the mountains and the tree and everything. When not grasped, we will not say they exist or they don't exist. It doesn't mean that in the experience they disappear, their appearance disappear, not at all. Nothing disappear. But the way that we relate to them through grasping, that has changed. Now the second aspect of this wisdom is also impermanence. Again, if we want to grasp at things, oh, that's too bad, things are just impermanent, they're changing, as another statement. Just we can't grasp at things as being stable. There's nothing stable. There's nothing we can grasp at and saying it is stable. So in a sense, it's very linked with also the first aspect. Could speak about the temporality also. Notion of time that we grasp. So impermanence is just a thing that we cannot grasp as things are staying. There is nothing that is stable if we were to wish for something that stays. Again, we are in the way of statement, of grasping at something in one way, and that does not work without grasping. Same with unsatisfactoriness. It's also a strange concept, and I think sometimes used in a slightly unskillful way from my point of view. So the world is unsatisfactory. What is unsatisfactory is the world seen through confusion. When we are confused, then there is a lot of unsatisfaction because we are mistaken. Imagine a pilot, you know, starting to read his newspaper when he is 50 meters from the ground, you know. There is going to be unsatisfaction. You know? So, in the same way, when we connect to the world with confusion, there is unsatisfaction because the world does not work the way that we believe it works. Then constantly we are facing this, it does not work the way I expected. So the aspect of being unsatisfactory that is being revealed through that we cannot hope or look for some satisfaction that will be able, that we can grasp. There is nothing that can be grasped as satisfaction. Because there's nothing that can be grasped. But now if we were to grasp at unsatisfactoriness, so the world is unsatisfactory. So it's just another way to grasp. It is as misleading and maybe more misleading than to believe there is some satisfaction. So just not to, I think, oversee the meaning of impermanence or unsatisfactoriness. Because sometimes it can be a burden in the Buddhist tradition. You go there, and you come nicely to a retreat, and then they speak about suffering and suffering and suffering, and you wonder why you came here. You know? They say in the text, all compound phenomena are impermanent. We understand, it's nearly logical that's changing, but also, I don't know in the Pali, but in Tibetan they made it very clear, all phenomena seen through confusion are unsatisfactory. They don't say the world in its nature is unsatisfactory. They say the world seen through confusion is unsatisfactory. And that's quite important. What makes the unsatisfaction is the way we place expectation without seeing clearly the situation, and therefore our expectation is being to be not met. So I think this distinction, and not clinging to the reverse, because we believe when we say some or when we don't state the existence of something, we state its non-existence. And I think that's not what it is. It's just no statement. There's no statement. Because that cannot be grasped. Otherwise we get to something which is even, I think, more confusing, which is some kind of clinging to negation or to emptiness or something like that. And it happens sometimes in Buddhist group where people say, oh, everything is empty. It's a statement. You know, it's more confusing than believing in reality of the world. So I think one has to be very careful. Not to use medicine as a poison. So that's what we're exploring in our Vipassana practice. And it doesn't need to be as complicated as I was tonight, you know, that you can forget. It's just about trying to be as close as possible to each experience. When there is hearing, just to hear. When there is tasting food, also just, can I just taste the food? It's so fantastic. It's just this experience of tasting. Don't need to say I'm tasting this and that, or as I said, in seeing, trying to explore, just being in this experience, in seeing, just seeing. And then also we can explore through the practice in thinking, just thinking. No, I think this, just thinking. And then we can discover, being free from grasping and desire aversion and confusion, that there is a possibility for freedom. Yeah, the practice is simple. We try to give the context. Okay, so now there's time for walking, and we can meet at 9 o'clock for the last sitting.